listener exclusive.
The Bidgee Bubble.
And hello there. Welcome to episode 2 of the Bidgee Bubble. Great to be with you. I am Matty Ray and I'm joined by my co-host Matt Collins. Hello, sir.
Matt and Matty, I reckon we should get into radio or something. That sounds like a good combo. Good duo.
I reckon it would be a very good duo for radio. It's something we should look at doing one day.
We've got the faces for radio, Matty.
Oh, I don't know about you. My face is pretty good.
It is.
Mate, episode 1 last week, an interesting one.
It was great, and we've had a lot of good feedback about our mate Trev.
Yeah, Trev.
Trevor Hornery, the tennis superstar that likes a bit of a puff at in the breaks. He's turned into a bit of a local legend, Matty.
He was already a local legend, mate. He didn't need to turn. He's turned into more of one. It's probably the more apt term after he caught up with us in episode 1 of the Bidgee Bubble last week. Well, this is episode 2. Yeah, this is a new thing for us. It's basically just us keeping a finger on the pulse of all of what's going on in the MIA, and it's a ripper of a weekend, Matty, isn't it?
It certainly is, mate. Yeah. The Bidgee Bubble, it's where the locals go to get all the information, especially, well, we chat to local legends, we chat to you, the punters, the people, to find out what's happening in your neck of the woods. And as you say, Matty, so many events happening this weekend. It's actually quicker, I reckon, to say what's not on.
Yeah, I think it is.
This weekend.
Something that I do want to flag, though, and it's one of the things that we're going to get into in the episode today, is you've heard something from Oliver Jarks that was a bit interesting. It's concerning the art gallery and something that's on Banner Ave where they are.
Yeah, that's right. Journo Jarks, we get him on the Brekkie Show every week, and he keeps us up to date on all the stories making news. This one is in regards to the War Memorial Museum in Banner Ave. Right next door. In fact, I think they the art gallery, this might not be true, but the art gallery, I think, leases space from the War Memorial Museum. In any case, in the last month or so, the War Memorial has put out the front. Some people are calling this a cannon, Matty, but it's not a cannon. It's actually a gun with wheels, and it does look like a cannon, but it's not.
Yes.
From World War One, I think, going right back. And it's out the front now, and there were concerns. And look, let's face it, it's in jest. It's a bit of a light-hearted story. But the art gallery was concerned that the gun was facing them.
I mean, we speak to Ray and Melanie at the art gallery. I'm sure, you know, they didn't mean any offence or anything like that.
Sure they didn't.
When they pointed this out. But, there's someone that knows a bit about the gun that you're going to speak to. Should I say gun or cannon?
No, it is a gun.
Can we just call it a piece of art?
Yeah, it's a legit weapon. In any case, we're going to hear from Vice President at the Griffith War Memorial, Martin Gatto, today. He's going to put to rest all this talk of where the gun is aiming, if at all, and tell us a bit more about how they were able to access the gun.
We said plenty of things happening over the weekend in Griffith, but we're taking a look at things beyond that as well in the Bidgee Bubble. This April, there'll be the cup meeting at the Leeton Jockey Club, and you know that, Matt. It's 80 years for the Leeton Jockey Club this
Goodness
year.
Goodness me. A rich history there, eh?
Yep. We are going to catch up with their president, Grant Fitzsimmon, and we are going to have some fun. You had a chat with a music legend this week.
Mossy! Ian
Moss
from Cold Chisel. He's coming to town this weekend out to Hay, along with country superstar Amber Lawrence and Bendigo duo Pure Black. So some big names, none bigger than Mossy, of course. And we're going to talk to him about and I could probably ask you, Matty, the same thing, the pros and cons of having massive success.
We've seen Taylor Swift be in the country for so long, and for these people, they can't fart without it being in the news headlines.
Well, this is it. And funnily, you mentioned Tay-Tay because on Triple M, Ian Moss does a cover of a Taylor Swift tune, a well-known tune, and I play a little grab in it in the Bidgee Bubble today.
Episode 2, and we're already getting Mossy. Like, well, the bar's pretty high.
Well, it certainly is. Where do you go after Ian Moss?
I'm stressing now.
Aussie rock royalty.
I'm stressing now about what we've got to get for episode 3.
this really is a great chat. We talk, just mentioned earlier, about the Taylor versions. We're going to hear a little bit of Ian Moss doing Taylor Swift. But then I ask him about having massive success, and let's face it, between his solo stuff and Cold Chisel, I mean, they are, Chisel, one of the greatest rock bands of our time, and I ask him about that massive success and the goods and bads of that success. But with that massive success, and I want to tie in Taylor Swift here, strangely, because you did a Triple M version of one of her tunes. Here's a little grab of it. I've got that James Dean daydream, look in my eye. You got. Did you have one of the Taylor Swift outfits on at the time, Mossy, when you were doing this one?
Oh, you should have seen me. The heels. Had I thought the heels were very touching.
But, mate, she's obviously in the country. Massive, massive success. And you're a good person to ask. So what are the goods and bads of having a high level of success like that?
I don't know. Well, I mean, you don't chase it if you don't sort of crave it. I don't know. You do it for the attention. You love the if you can write a good song and it turns you on, then it turns a whole bunch of people on. You love to get that feedback. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Someone like some people might have to put up with more of a sort of that they just can't go anywhere or can't do anything without being recognised and mobbed.
But you must have that from time to time. Like, is there times where you go, I wish I wasn't Mossy?
Oh, all the time, just like carry baseball bats around and cans of fly spray and stuff. certainly not to the extent of a sort of like a Taylor Swift or Kylie Minogue would have had to have put up with.
No, but you're a well-known person, right across the country, but definitely in Australia and NZ whatnot, and I guess it's just one of those things that comes with the success that you and the band have had.
Yeah, look, it's good. I mean, because I feel like just carefully say it. I don't promote myself to be anything more than what I am on record and what I sound like and what I play. And right, that's me. So I'm just being me. I'm not propping up some kind of big image which is kind of fake or not really me. I just be myself out there, so I'm pretty comfortable with it from that point. I feel genuine, I feel I'm being true, kind of thing.
Well, it does, and it sort of shines through in your music as well, doesn't it?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, I think it's important to do your best on record when you perform, and that's all you can do. If you can live up to that, then you're being genuine, you're being real, and you're not trying to say be anything more than that. Something like that.
Yeah. No, I appreciate you answering the question. Doing these your own shows with your own band away from Chisel, is that important to you? Is that something that you do look forward to?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's always it's always the bittersweet thing with Cold Chisel. It's fabulous, and every time we do get back together. But at the same time, you always you pitch in and be part of that team. But there's always part of you going, well, actually, if it was my song and I had to call all the shots, I'd probably do it like this or do that or do this. Mm-hmm. But if I can have my cake and eat it too, then and be doing something I love doing and make a living out of it, I'm in a pretty good spot.
Is it a challenge to get your creative voice heard when you're around the other Chisel members?
Not really, because they seem to be happening at different times. Cold Chisel, it's either on, when it's either on, when it's on, they're away, and then there's plenty of space for the individual, whether it be Barnes, Walker, or myself, to shine through. I think all of us are well-established enough to people know that we don't make any attempt at all to hang on the coattails of Cold Chisel. We've earned that respect to say, well, no, he's doing his own thing. He's not just sort of covering Cold Chisel and trying to sound like Cold Chisel. He's actually got something else, or something of his own to say, and he's got a different sound. He's got his own sound, his own style, and own agenda.
And you see that with a lot of great bands, is any of the members could go out and sometimes do their own thing and do it very, very well, but that's what makes that band so good in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of all the parts and all that kind of stuff. It's you know, the reason that band, for like a band like Cultures, is so good is because every single member has got an individuality about them that they can bring to the table and put that towards what is Cultures.
Jimmy's had his own health issues the last few months. It's great to see in the news that he is on the mend. Have you spoken to him recently?
I'm overdue for a call about 3 weeks ago, and yeah, it was all looking really, really positive. You know, we all got really worried there for a while. And I mean, the guy's always had the constitution, an amazing constitution. So I'd say combining with the fact that he was really getting stuck into fitness, and as he said, he was the fittest he'd been in a long time. We pulled him through. I don't know if another man might have made it through.
It'll be Jimmy, Keith Richards and the Cockroaches, I think, at the end.
Exactly. It's got on there.
Mate, last question. We certainly appreciate you giving us so much time this morning. When Ian Moss isn't playing guitar, doing your solo shows or with Chisel, what do you like to get up to?
I've got a nice big fat motorbike, 1800cc Indian Springfield.
Oh, there you go.
And I do a bit of flying as well. I got my pilot's license a few years ago, let it lapse. I'm just in the middle of just getting that back up and running. It's a PPL, private pilot's license, yeah.
You done any big long trips on the bike, on the Indian?
On the Indian, February 22, me and three mates did the drive from Sydney all the way down to over the mountains and through Victoria, chucked our bikes on the ferry in Melbourne and got over to Tassie and did 2 weeks hurling around Tassie. It was just absolutely fabulous.
Mate, that would have been that would have been terrible, Mossy.
I couldn't recommend that trip more highly.
I can imagine.
As when we lined up, you know, queued up on the bike and parked our bikes along with the other 2,000 motorbikes that must have been on that boat of different groups doing exactly the same thing.
What a trip. Good on you. Ian Moss is coming to town. He's coming to Hay for Tunes on the Green, and it's March the 16th.
With band, right. Six-piece band, and Rivers Run Dry, Bow River, Matchbook, playing in them all.
All the classics and some of the new stuff as well, and there's some rippers on there. Make sure you get your tickets. The website is visithay.com.au. Don't be the one person that misses out at the Hay Golf Club Saturday night, March the 16th. Ian Moss, mate, great to chat. Thanks for giving us so much time, and we look forward to seeing you in Hay.
Good on you, Matt. Thanks very much.
You're on the Bidgee Bubble. This April, the Leeton Jockey Club will celebrate 80 years with its annual cup meeting. And we're joined now by the president, Grant Fitzsimmons. Grant, thank you so much for coming on the pod today.
No problems at all. Nice to be here.
You've been president of the club for 20 years. It's a long time. What was it that first got you involved?
Yeah, well, what happened, I went to a race meeting back 21 years ago, I suppose it might have been, No, because I was on the committee for a couple of years. So 20-odd years ago, went to a race meeting on a Saturday afternoon after a morning game of golf with some fellas. And anyway, we had a really, really great day. It wasn't a huge crowd. The weather was fantastic. The racing was good. The grounds were sensational. Lo and behold, about 2 or 3 weeks later, there was an advertisement in the local irrigator regarding a bit of a crisis meeting for the Leeton Jockey Club. They looked like they were in a bit of financial difficulty and folding and type thing. So there was a meeting held at the Leetonshire Council. So I rang my mates that I had a game of golf with, and actually two of those guys are still on the committee today, and another fellow that joined the committee back then is still on the committee as well. So we formed a small little working committee, and we decided to put on a picnic race on the day of their normal professional race meeting, where we got tents and marquees and so forth, and we really built a really big crowd from that first day. It sort of picked up, the town got behind us, and we've sort of gone from there.
Someone else has a bit of a history with the club that's a little bit longer than that even now. A 60-year history with the Leeton Jockey Club. I'm talking about Mr. Racing Grant, Peter Clancy. He's still working full-time as a trainer at 86.
That is correct, yes, and he's still getting winners as well. So he's going really good. His son Greg and Brianna Burke. They help him out during the week and what have you. And I think he picked up a winner there about 3 or 4 weeks ago in Wagga. And so Peter Clancy, he first appeared in the local record books back in the early 1950s as an amateur jockey. And his whole family, his father and what have you, were fully involved with the Leeton Jockey Club back in the early days and the start of the racing industry in Leeton. So Peter has been renowned for his work with apprentice jockeys. One of the highlighted names, Tim Clark. Now, Tim Clark is still racing in Sydney. He's the leading jockey for Gay Waterhouse and Adrian Bott. He's won multiple Group 1 races. He's travelled the world in Hong Kong, and he's up there at the top jockeys with Sydney and Australia. So Peter has nursed Tim Clark during his apprenticeship. His brother Brad Clark was an excellent horse rider as well. He rode in the region. He had a bit of a stint in Sydney in his early days. Recently is Johnny Kissick. Peter thought he was probably going to be one of the better jockeys that come out, and he is, but he seems to be prone with injuries. And currently Nick Haywood, he also finished his apprenticeship through Peter, and he's based in Goulburn, and he's a prolific country jockey winner as well. So we gave Peter the naming of the Leeton Jockey Club function room back in the mid-2010s or 15s or something like that. So, and we've named that as Clancy's Lodge. A few years ago, Peter was awarded a very prestigious award from Racing New South Wales. Now, it's awarded to one person every year for their contribution to racing throughout New South Wales. And Peter was nominated by somebody. It wasn't anyone from the Leeton Jockey Club. Or somebody outside the industry, outside our area, and it's called the Simon Nivison Award. And Peter was very proud of winning that award. It's an award that it's not lightly given out to people. And there was a big gala presentation in Sydney, which I was fortunate enough to attend to with Peter. He was quite chuffed in winning that award as well. So
yeah. An impeccable record as both a mentor as well as a trainer with his Murrungle Hill Stables, having about 5,000 plus starters, 631 wins, and nearly 1,200 places. And many of those came in Leeton. And of course, a lot of the apprentices have come from the local MIA community as well, but still doing it full time at 86. You think you'll be doing that?
Might be, mate. I hope I am still about, but I don't know about being with the Leeton Jockey Club. Yeah.
Grant, it'd be remiss of me to not at least ask the question. Let's look a little bit beyond even Peter's time, which is quite extraordinary in the 80 years of the Leeton Jockey Club. He's been there for about 60. But before it all started, the area was it an airstrip, I understand?
Yeah, look, it was back in 1930. It was sanctioned as a reserve for a race course and a public recreation and aviation area.
Yeah.
So they were actually landing passenger aircraft at the Jockey Club grounds up until 1993. So it was an actual airstrip for passengers. Even Charles Kingsford Smith attended flying in there a few times as well. So and then it moved. Obviously, that moved to out towards Narrandera there back then. So it was an airstrip. The birth of the Leeton Jockey Club came on April 6, 1944.
Yep.
The meeting in town to form a jockey club. There was a few organisations that did occasional, a Gymkhana or something, and all those money raised on those days prior to the Leeton Jockey Club coming in went to the Prisoner of War Fund.
Yeah.
So the jockey club itself was birthed in 1944. So, and then obviously a heap of working bees over a couple of years and so forth, and then actually the first actual race meeting, even though the Jockey Club turns 80 this year because it was formed then, the first actual race meeting wasn't until 1946.
We can celebrate 80 years of the club today, and 2 years from now we can celebrate 80 years of meetings again. So why not two celebrations?
Well, that's what we're here for.
Of course. So 80 years of the Leeton Jockey Club, we're going to commemorate this at the Cup meeting in April. We're going to recognise that milestone. What's special that is planned for this meeting, Grant, in April?
we've got a souvenir booklet that's going out in our race book this year, and in regards to all the history of the club and so forth. Kim Woods has done a fantastic job in organising this, and we'll have a special presentation on the day, and obviously I'll have Peter Clancy there as our guest for the day, and any previous members of the committee over the last 80 years can certainly come and attend. We'll have a cake to cut and a few little presentations on the day. So that meeting is on the 20th of April. Our race days are very similar. We've continued on the fashions of the field, some fantastic prizes. The town gets behind us, holiday packages and so forth this year and things like that. So it's things like that. We've got entertainment on the day. So basically we formed a bit of a niche type event in regards to making it a day out, and it sort of continued on that way, like making it a social day out for the town people and also for visitors that come to town.
80 years in 2024 for the Leeton Jockey Club. Do not miss Cup Day this April. And congratulations to the Leeton Jockey Club committee, to yourself, Grant. Also, I want to mention Peter Clancy and acknowledge his wonderful contribution to the club over 60 years. Hope he's feeling well now. And all the best for this meeting in April.
Thanks very much.
Matty, great chat with Grant there. And what about Mr. Racing himself? Trainer Pete at 86. Matty, I don't know what I'll be doing at 86, but I don't think it'll be training horses.
I'm not sure I'll be alive by that stage. If I am, I'll consider it a bonus.
Very, very impressive. And yeah, great chat. Let's turn the page now and talk about this story. We mentioned it in the intro. Journo Jarks made us aware of it. It's about the Griffith War Memorial Museum and their new landmark that sits out the front of the War Memorial on Banner Ave, of course, in Griffith. And look, there's certain people that are suggesting it might be pointed at the art gallery. It might be pointed at council. But I think we should reach out to the vice president at the Griffith War Memorial Museum, Martin Gatto, to find out if it is pointed anywhere in particular.
Pointed nowhere near towards the art gallery. Some people say it's pointed towards council, but even that's a bit off.
Well, that would make more sense.
It's points way out to west.
Right.
So, it's not pointing at anything in particular.
All right. Well, that's good to know. But look, nothing else. It does generate a lot of interest and attention for A, the art gallery, and B, the War Memorial Museum, and getting to chat to you today, because your fingerprints are all over bringing this weapon to town.
Yes, we wanted something. The art gallery and the War Memorial Museum building is sort of hidden a bit as you walk past. And I've done a lot of studying of people over the years, and people seem to walk past and not even know it's there.
Right.
So specifically with the War Memorial side, we wanted something to attract people to the museum.
A bit of a landmark.
That's right. Mm. And to get them to come in, because you'd be surprised how many people go into the museum and say, I never knew it was here. Mm. That's happening all the time.
Well, how long ago since that gun's been in place?
The gun itself has been there for about a month now. It took a while to get something to put out the front. I've been involved with the military disposals for pushing about 3 years now, trying to find something to put out the front.
Right.
I finally found that, yes.
So that was only, say, a month ago, February 2024, that's been put in place.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And before that, there was nothing there?
The gun wasn't there, no.
Wow, there was nothing at the front, really?
There was a green bush at the front of the art gallery side that hid the art gallery that you couldn't even see. So that was atrocious. That had to go. But then we wanted something, like I said, to attract everyone.
Something to attract attention and tourists coming to town. You had nothing before that?
Not really on that side. Nothing that stood out.
Wow.
A couple of little flags on our side, and even the art gallery only had a couple of little signs. But now people see that gun and see our museum and the art gallery.
But it's been a process, Martin, hasn't it, to actually getting it here? Because at one stage it looked like you weren't going to get it.
Well, that piece of equipment, once they come along, we've got it. But like I said, trying to find something for 3 years. But then finally they found this gun. It was offered to someone else. They hummed and hawed and were given a timetable and a cut-off time, and they never got back, so it became ours. Yes. But we, before that, trying to find something like that is a little bit hard.
Well, but can you take us through the process? Because I'm guessing, you know, you do a bit of digging on a regular basis. Is it as simple as going onto your, you know, Gumtree or Marketplace and finding these things? Or do you have access to other avenues?
No, it's a matter of process with the relevant Department of Defence and finding the right phone numbers and the right people to talk to. You do that through some of the local members, federal members, I should say, so you can get to the right people to speak to, and then from there you work with them and just see what they can find, basically.
Right. Yep. And so you're able to do that, and then once you realise that this weapon was available, what's involved then? Do you just say, yep, we'll take it? Is there a cost involved? How do you end up with that out the front?
We said definitely we'll take it when we were offered it to, you know, to us. We did have to pay a small amount of money. The gun itself was fully restored. Then we had to get it transported from Lavington up here, get a concrete slab to put it on, organised, and a few other things, a few steel supports. So we had a lot of sponsors, a great Leighton Transport Company that went down and picked it up for us and brought it back. And so a lot of people helped, and there's a lot of paperwork. Then we had to do the DA for through council, which took a while, and then all the relevant legal requirements as far as...
The DA to put that out the front of the museum?
To put it on display out the front. More the concrete slab that it sits on, the DA was for. Yeah.
Right. Give us a bit of the background of the weapon. Where has it come from?
That one is a little bit hard to say. Like I said, we picked it up from Lavington. What happens with those things, all the paperwork seems to be put in deep archive, and the people I've talked to are chasing that up for me right now so I can put it on a
plaque or
information board inside. So that's actually being worked on right now to find out where it was actually stationed.
What's your guess, though? Like, what sort of year are we talking about?
Well, that was one of 40, roughly, guns brought to Australia, used in World War II overseas everywhere, but those guns in Australia never saw action. Mm. So which actual regiment or where it was stationed in Australia we're working on at the moment to find out, to put on the information plaque.
And this is why you do what you do, Martin. Something tells me this is the stuff you enjoy, yeah?
Yes, I enjoy finding that information out, so we know. Yes, it's something I like to do, yes.
All right, so it's in place now. So, well, was there an official cutting the ribbon thing? Was all the pollies there taking credit for it all?
No, not at the moment. No, just the volunteers that helped us. Basically, just and volunteers that volunteered their time and the trucks and moved it there. So, yeah, at the moment, no. But we're still working on it, still getting plaques made up. So it's a little bit still in process at the moment.
All right, mate. Well, listen, we appreciate you painting a bit more of a picture of this weapon. Speaking of the volunteers, Martin, there'll be at least a couple of people listening going, I want to come and help out. I want to get involved. What's the easiest way for them to do that?
Yes, you can volunteer. We are looking for volunteers, as a lot of our group now have been there for a while. We need some fresh people to come in. We don't want it to eventually just fold because there's no people to man the door or anything like that. So I'd like any people with an interest in military history, an interest in their families that were in that sort of stuff, or someone wants to volunteer, or ex-servicemen that are now in town, or just anyone that wants to get involved, you can come down and see us. Probably on a Saturday morning is probably the best, or you can ring myself if you want on 0427 627 424 and leave a message and I'll get back to you. I think, you'd be surprised how rewarding it is.
Oh, I can imagine. And, the rich, rich, rich history. And, you know, I mean, it's, you know, there's some, so you'll be a part of history, won't you, if you get involved with the Griffith War Memorial Museum. Martin Gatto, Vice President at the museum, mate, it's great to chat to you. Thanks for giving us some time today. One more question. The weapon out the front. The art gallery thinks it's pointed at them. The council, it may be pointed at the council. Was there any strategy as to the placement, or did you just say, plonk it down and here it will live?
No, it was just a talking amongst a few of the people standing around, and they all think that was the best aesthetics in the direction it's facing now. It looked better that way, with the barrel over the walkway, basically.
There you go. You heard it here first. It's not pointed at anyone or anything or any building. It just loud and proud sitting there where it is. Good on you, Martin. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
You know, Matt, if this thing was pointed at the building that we're in right now, you know, I wouldn't think anything of it. I mean, it could have been pointed there when Pizza Hut used to be here for all we know.
No, well, this is it. Yeah. And I think, as we said, it's a bit of a light story, a bit of fun perhaps. But for some people, just the notion of a weapon being pointed at you, albeit one that's just more of a landmark than anything else, still some people don't like that.
Yeah, true.
I get that. All right, let's, we said in the get-go, Matty, a massive, massive weekend of events right across the Bidgee. Yep. And you come to the Bidgee Bubble to find out what's happening. Let's go through some of them. Obviously, Mossy, Saturday night in Hay, that's going to be a hell of a show. You can get your tickets at visithay.com. Ardlethan Races, of course. That's happening on Saturday. Matty, did you know the Ardlethan Picnic Races is one of, if not the only, real, genuine picnic races left in the state?
Well, they were talking about, I was talking about this with Grant Fitzsimmon, the president of Leeton Jockey Club, earlier in the episode, and he mentioned the picnic racing idea that's brought out the success of the Leeton Jockey Club in its club meetings in these past 20 years. So what is it? I mean, fashions of the field or marquees, tents? I thought that was just part of every racing.
Is.
Yeah. But what
picnic races is you can take in your picnic. You can take in your alcoholic beverages. You can take in your barbecue supplies, your sandwiches, the whole deal. And they're not going to turn you away at the gate like they would at most other events. A nice, cheap family day out, Manny, perhaps.
I prefer mine with cars than horses, but that sounds cool. Lake Wyangan Classic. Now, of course, we had the Riverina Darlington Point Classic not that long ago. It's an absolutely big event, that one. Though, for the fishing fans out there, the Lake Wyangan Classic's closing in. It'll be tomorrow from 7 a.m. until 4 p.m. There'll be sign-on happening, I think, right through until 10:30 or 11. Check the Facebook page out for that exact time. Do not quote me. It's going to be a huge day of fishing on the water. And that's thankfully, the weather's not that bad. We're not going to be sweltering through.
A little bit cool. I think I know, tops of 28, 29, something like that.
Yeah, like around the late 20s, early 30s mark for the weekend and on Saturday. So that makes it a lot better than just being out there in any extreme heat of the late 30s or even early 40s. But still, of course, we're in someone who's local and grown up here all their lives has told me that this has been the warmest start to autumn for Griffith.
Doesn't surprise me.
In their memory. At the same time, while it is cooler this weekend, please make sure you slip, slop, slap, seek and
that's
slide.
For sure. Yeah. All right. In Yenda, the Woodstock is coming back. Matty, now you're too young to know about Woodstock.
I covered it at radio school. What am I talking about radio school for? We were talking about this earlier in the episode that you and I should actually go on radio one day. We'd be good at it.
Oh, and I need to go to school first. Woodstock, yeah, right. No Mud in Yenda. That's going to be a massive event. And if you're out in West Wyalong, the rodeo is on. Plenty of bucking bulls out there, Matty, this weekend.
You're going to be on one, aren't you?
I love watching it, I've got to say. The bucking bulls. I would want to be nowhere near the very, very brave men and women that jump on the back of a bull, I got to say.
And the ones in the ring already to make sure that the bull doesn't squash
those clowns. Yes. They are anything but. They are very brave individuals, that's for sure. But what a weekend it is. And, yeah, make sure you get out this week and enjoy it and support these great local events.
Woodstock no mud, though. I mean, I thought the mud was a real part of the first Woodstock. People were sliding in it having fun.
Oh, yeah. Some great stories from that time. I say it like I was there. I wasn't. I wish I was, but I wasn't. And, yeah, it looks like it's going to be a pretty fine weekend. So, as they say, Woodstock, no mud. Have a great week,
Matt. Yeah, you too, Matt. Great being with you. This is episode 2 of the Bidgee Bubble. It's happening again next week exclusively on the Listener app.
A Listener Exclusive.